1240WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
All right, welcome to the show. Getting this one posted a little later than usual today. Some folks from corporate brought pizza in to the studios, so come on, we can't go without that. So some yummy pizza in there. That's the reason we're running just a little bit late. But some good stuff today. We have two guests, Mitch Stewart. Now, I heard from Mitch, of course, yesterday, or you did, if you listened to the show, talk right after the fall camp ended. And today, we're going to get an update from Mitch after they've had a chance to look at film, get together as coaches and evaluate, and get the depth chart. We've learned today that the Racers have selected a number two quarterback. They have made decisions on who will be the place kicker, who will be the punter. Running back may be an issue. Mark Dodson still hasn't got his eligibility to play cleared up. Now, he's eligible to be at Murray State. That's not the issue. It's can he play as a transfer? It's a complicated issue because if you transfer from a bowl division school to an FCS school, you can play immediately. However, he transferred from Ole Miss to Memphis, and that complicates the issue. So we're going to get into that with Mitch Stewart, the Racerhead football coach, in just a bit. He's going to give us the latest on that. Then Josh Planos is going to be along. We're on the cusp of college football starting next week, so we'll talk a lot about that on next week's show. I'm going to ask him about the AP Top 25 that came out. He'll give us his ideas. But we're going to talk some baseball, National League Central. We'll talk NBA. Got a question I'm going to ask him about the NBA and some NFL things. What about Jameis Winston? How's he doing so far? Josh always has a great take on everything. I think a brilliant writer. One that I expect somewhere down the road we will not be able to have on, because he'll go on to bigger and better things. He's just that good. But he'll be along and talk about a variety of things on the second part of the show. Before we get to any of that, talked about some waiver issues, or at least the Racers applying for an NCAA waiver with Mark Dodson. University of Kentucky applied for two. They were denied. Mark Stoops says the NCAA denied hardship waiver request by Courtney Love. No, not that one. This is Courtney Love, the linebacker, and Greg Hart to play for the Kentucky Wildcats this season. Both transferred from Nebraska. Stoops said at yesterday's press conference, the school is appealing the NCAA's decision on Love, who arrived in Lexington in January. They had hoped to become eligible this fall, but appear likely to be sitting out per transfer rules unless the ruling is reversed. Those are usually less certain. Kind of doubt that UK is able to prevail in that. Never know, but sort of doubt it. St. Louis Cardinals with a win last night, a 3-run seventh, the difference. The Cardinals beat the Diamondbacks 5-3 because of my early hours here at the station. Wasn't able to watch all the game. Turned in about 10:45, whenever. The Cardinals were up 2-1 when I went to bed. I hope for the best. Got the best. 5-3, they win. Lance Lynn gets the victory. Trevor Rosenthal nails down his 39th save. And we have Patrick Corbin against Jaime Garcia tonight. 8:40 the first pitch, 7:45 the airtime on WNBS. Down on the farm, the Redbirds in Memphis lost in Tacoma, actually, 10-6. Nick Greenwood rocked for 9 runs and 3-plus innings. Good night for Xavier Scruggs in defeat, 3-for-5 with a pair of runs batted in. St. Louis Rams rookie running back Todd Gurley being cleared to practice with the team, coming off ACL injury in college last November. Head coach Jeff Fisher says they'll go slowly with him and he will not play in the preseason. And former Lady Vols head coach Pat Summitt will return as head coach emeritus for the University of Tennessee. The Knoxville News Sentinel reporting Summitt will be signing a new contract that's similar to the one-year deal she had last year. Her contract includes a salary of $75,000 and season tickets to the university's sporting events. The eight-time national championship winning coach retired from her head coaching position in 2012 after announcing she had early onset dementia. All right, I'm going to take a break. When I return, it is Mitch Stewart. Fires into the end zone.
Football season is back. Join us Thursday, September 3rd at 6 p.m. when Murray State hosts Kentucky Wesleyan at Roy Stewart Stadium. Be there for the season opener as we honor the Racer seniors before the game. Wear gold and watch as all new freshmen will rush the field with Dr. Davies. There's nothing like being there. You won't look back on any of the games you watch from the couch. Season tickets and individual game tickets are available. Call now at 270-809-3000.
As promised, joined by the Racerhead football coach Mitch Stewart. A week from Thursday, the Racers will open the season. Last time I spoke with Mitch was Saturday afternoon right after the scrimmage. Coach, now you've had a chance to look at the film, talk with the other coaches. Tell me what you think about how fall camp ended for you.
Well, you know, I'm pretty excited about it. We got, I think, from a contact aspect, we did what we wanted to do. Up until this point, we got the amount of contact reps that we wanted. We've got the biggest thing that we're pretty excited about was the amount of situations we were able to put the guys in. Just from a standpoint of that was the one thing going into it that I thought that we kind of lacked because we've got, you know, we had a big signing class, so we're relatively young. Even though when you look at it, we've got 20 some odd seniors. But we also had a big signing class. We had a lot of young guys and a lot of new faces in the program. And just after being around those guys for a little while, we kind of realized that we weren't very football intelligent as a team. And so we really wanted to put them through a lot of situations, put the quarterbacks through a lot of situations, clock management and things like that. And obviously I wanted to do that with a new staff just because that was kind of a way for us to scrimmage as well. All the coaches going through some of those clock management situations and all that. So I think from those two aspects, we were really excited about how fall camp ended and how it went. And then also from an injury standpoint, that's probably, knock on wood, what I'm most pleased about right now is, you know, we're not just super beat up. I think we're as beat up as we need to be. And the guys, obviously, I was just watching film. It's funny, I was literally just talking about this. I was watching film from day one to day 22, and there's a big difference. But it's supposed to be like that right now, and we can kind of tailor the next couple of days to try to get them back as fresh as we can going into week one.
Will Marcus Holliday be ready for the season to begin?
He won't be ready for the season opener. I think that we can get him back pretty quickly. It's just a matter of he had a plate put in that hand. They weren't able to do pins in it, but he did go. They put some plates in it. It's kind of a boxer's fracture right there,
right,
in his hand. And so the only thing that we were concerned about is just his ability to catch. You know, obviously in our offense, those running backs have to have the ability to catch as well. So that's, from an offensive standpoint, that's the only thing that we're worried about. Now, I think we can get some snaps out of him, special teams-wise and things of that nature. So we're just kind of – he's a wait-and-see guy. We've got him on the back burner right now. I think he goes to the doctor here in the next day or two, and we'll kind of go from there.
Do you have a number two quarterback coming out of that scrimmage?
We do, but it's kind of a tricky situation. Basically, Houston Hartz is our backup quarterback right now. And I say that we're going to try to redshirt Matthew Christian and Jake O'Mara, and really want to try to redshirt those guys. So Houston Hartz, he's already redshirted, so we're going to go in with him being the backup quarterback, meaning if KD's helmet pops off and he has to come off the field, then Houston will go in and he'll take that snap, you know, or knock on wood, if the unthinkable happened, then Houston would be the one to have to get us to Sunday, and then once we got to Sunday, then we would probably reevaluate and kind of open the position back up is how we're going to handle it right now.
All right. Also, running back-wise, I saw a lot of different guys carrying the ball. Are you pretty much set on what you're going to do there?
Yeah, we are. You know, Nick Taylor he's our number one right now. He's probably the most explosive with the ball in his hand. You know, Mark Dotson, the thing about Mark is we're still waiting We're still waiting a decision from the NCAA on his transfer status. So there's a, it's still kind of up in the air whether or not he may get redshirted this year, just from a standpoint of he may still be ineligible. We're in the process of a waiver for the NCAA because he transferred from Ole Miss to Memphis. But was never on scholarship at Memphis, nor did he ever compete. He was only there for a spring semester. So we're still waiting that decision. So that's the reason why you've seen so many guys is we're in a little bit of a quandary there because, you know, you got to be careful. You don't want to rep him too much and take reps away from guys if he's deemed ineligible. But at the same time, you better make sure that he's ready to play, because if he's deemed eligible, then he's probably – he's probably our starting running back, just because he's a little bit more, he's a little bit more of a complete back. Whereas Nick Taylor, you know, because he's a speedster, he's a shifty guy, but obviously there's some things that Nick Taylor, just size wise, he can't bring to the table, and Nick Dotson's a little bit more complete back.
I'm not a know-it-all kind of guy when it comes to football, but I was able to notice Elijah Daniels' impact in these scrimmages. Man, he looked fantastic the other day, and you throw him in with a healthy Demetrius Mason and the rest of those guys up front, and you might really have something there, Coach.
Well, I think that's probably – I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but that's probably where we feel the strongest, just to be quite honest with you. You know, that was one thing that we did in recruiting. We wanted to go try to help that situation out. And, you said Mason, the thing about Mason was this was the first time he's been here all summer. He's the healthiest he's ever been, and it shows when he's on the field. He's gotten himself into a situation to where he can play a shade and a nose, and he can also bump out to three technique if you need him to, because he's in that good a shape and he's that much quicker. And then the best thing about the last scrimmage was we finally saw – Elijah flipped the switch for numerous plays, and I'm gonna tell you now, when he decides he wants to go, he can go. And we've seen spurts of it before that scrimmage. You know, he would do it a play or two here and a play or two there, and that scrimmage was the first time that we saw him do it a complete series out. You know, and then go to the sideline, rest up, and then come back and do it a complete series out. And at times, we couldn't do anything with him. I'm just telling you, we could not do anything with him. So that was good to see. But you're right. I think that position, if we can stay healthy, which obviously everybody at this level's got the same deal, that you got to stay healthy. Everybody's ones and ones and some of the twos are pretty good, but everybody's an injury away from a totally different season. But I think for us, especially at that position, if we can stay healthy, I feel pretty good there.
Also, before I let you go, punter and place kicker, I was out there the first week of scrimmage, and it looked like daylight and dark. I feel good about it. Do you have your starter set for that spot, at least at this point?
Yeah, we punter Stratton. He's done a tremendous job for us. He does pretty good, and which is good to see, because it gives me a chance to redshirt Rhett Morrison, the guy that we signed this year. I think he's going to be a tremendous punter. So I feel really good with Stratton. And then kind of what we're going into right now, I'll be honest with you, is at first we started out as Griffin Kent was the field goal kicker and then Connor Mitchell was the kickoff guy. But I'll be honest with you, Griffin Kent, this was the first year, too. He stayed around all summer. I mean, he never missed a workout. He was actually a weight room warrior, believe it or not.
Wow.
That's
unusual for a kicker.
Oh, I know it. I know it. I mean, he put on about 15 pounds. I mean, it actually looked pretty good when he took his shirt off, during the summer. But all jokes aside, it changed. His kickoffs, I'm really excited about the way that he's kicking the ball down the field. He's kicking it up and long. So I think right now, Griffin Kemp's going to be our starting place kicker and our kicker, and then Stratton will handle all the punting duties. And then obviously Wes Drury at snapper now has been a tremendous asset for us, just from a standpoint of operation, on all of those teams, just getting the ball off.
Well, Mitch, I appreciate the update. I can't wait to get it going a week from Thursday night. I know you can't either, and I know I'll see you Monday for a Hey Coach next Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. It's right. Getting close.
All right, we appreciate it. That is Mitch Stewart. Now let's talk with Josh Planos right after this.
Hey, John, check this baby out. It's my 1967 World Series championship ring. Man, what a year. Cepeda, Brock, Gibson, Maris, Flood. There were some great players from our championship team.
Mike, did you know the fans are receiving a 67 ring as well?
Hey, the more the merrier.
On September 4th, the Cardinals play the Pirates, and it's the replica 1967 World Series championship ring giveaway.
Like I said, the more the merrier. Tickets are available for the September 4th game against the Pirates at cardinals.com/promotions.
Welcome back to the show. As promised, Josh Planos, a frequent contributor to the Washington Post and other sites, joins us. Josh, let's talk NFL just a little bit, and that's Jameis Winston. He played last night, two games now in. What are the early returns on Jameis Winston?
Well, he seems to be the most poised of the first-round quarterbacks taken, I think. I think a lot of stock was put on Marcus Mariota, and he certainly had a tremendous last outing. But I think Jameis has really held his own. I think a lot of the elements of his game that people thought wouldn't translate or perhaps would stay not really a factor, like his ability outside of the pocket, is something that he's kind of shown can be effective at the next level. Last night I thought he made a brilliant read to tuck it and run for the touchdown, rather than force a pass, which is something that he did a lot of in college, with his high interception totals. But I think he's done a really good job of just kind of buying into the system that's in place there. Obviously, he's kind of got a number of young wide receivers at his disposal. Kenny Bell essentially rewrote every record in Nebraska football history, at least on the receiving end, and he's got him at his disposal. He's got Mike Evans. I think Vincent Jackson's down there, so he's got plenty of weapons in his arsenal, and I just think that he's really set himself up to have a productive rookie season.
I was really excited watching him play at Florida State, and so far excited about the beginning, but I was equally excited when the Tennessee Titans picked up Vince Young. He brought a lot of things that I kind of see in Jameis Winston. Not a direct comparison by far, but it never really worked out for him. But I realize he's a different character, and that's just the thing that, I don't know, kind of sticks with me. Maybe Jameis can do it where Vince Young could not. And a lot of that is maybe a character issue and leadership on the field, which Vince really never could translate.
Yeah, no, and I think you're totally right in questioning whether or not Jameis will be able to professionally transition into more of a role as a professional athlete. I think that remains to be seen. Obviously, we saw that Johnny Manziel wasn't really up for the task last year, and he had some character issues coming in. I know nothing about that. I'm sure that the beat reporters could tell you more about how he's been acting after practice, mm-hmm. throughout practice. But when you see his numbers, 8-13 last night, he hasn't really been turning the ball over. And he does stuff that I think Vince Young really had a hard time doing.
Yeah.
Connecting on the deep ball. Obviously, Vince relied much more heavily on his legs, to have those great outings,
right.
against USC and whatnot. But Jameis is more of a pocket quarterback, and I think obviously that bodes well with the system that they have in place down there. But you could be 100% right. He might not even see the field in the season opener if character issues pop up or if something were to happen. So a lot remains to be seen, but as far as his play on the field so far, I've been impressed.
Big blow for Packers fans. We have a kid from Murray who plays on the Packers who punts for them, and so a lot of Packers fans in the area, but they were dealt a big blow. Aaron Rodgers not happy about it when Jordy Nelson went down. How do they replace him? Can he be replaced? What do you see them doing?
I really don't think he can be replaced. Obviously, his numbers speak for themselves. He's been, Aaron Rodgers' go-to target for the last few seasons. Randall Cobb, had a productive year. I'd assume his targets would increase, and maybe if they can get Lacy more involved in the offense, that might be an alternative. But there's never going to be another Jordy Nelson that they can just plug in into the system and just hope to you know, stay at the same level. There are going to be some regressions, I think. Aaron Rodgers, luckily, is, you know, probably the best quarterback in football. So I think that they've got a lot of good things heading into the year.
Yeah.
And clearly it's a more talented team than just, you know, one player. But they have, you know, a couple of different, you know, weapons at Rodgers' disposal. But they're never going to get Nelson back. And losing him for the entire season has to be just crippling emotionally. You know, you talk all the time about, you know, how these guys play on the field, but, you know, how important they are in the locker room.
And, yeah.
You know, this guy won't even be in the locker room for, you know, at least a month while he, you know, goes through surgery and, you know, preliminary rehabilitation. So, you know, that's a huge blow. But also they don't really play in that difficult of a division, you know, and this is coming from someone who grew up watching the Bears. The Bears are picked to, you know, projected to be the worst team in the NFL this season. The Vikings are kind of perennially in the state of transition. You know, they really kind of have the division spelled out for them if they want it. But certainly losing Jordy Nelson, you know, doesn't help.
Fun player to watch. And another fun player, at least over the last decade, has been Reggie Wayne. The Patriots have inked him. Now, does he have anything left? He was sure great in his prime. Anything left for the Patriots?
You know, I think so. I mean, obviously, he's sure-handed. I don't think that was ever a question. It was just more whether or not, you know, athletically he could still stay up with, you know, the other receivers in the league, with the other corners in the league. But obviously, you know, we've seen Tom Brady lead teams to the Super Bowl that didn't have, you know, a single wide receiver of note. So, you know, adding Reggie Wayne to the fold can do nothing but improve them. I think that he probably won't get, you know, every snap. He probably will play, you know, portioned drives, but I think that when you have a sure-handed veteran receiver, you know, you can't look past how important that is from the locker room standpoint. You know, what he can bring to the, you know, the up-and-coming talent that they've got in their receiving core, what he can do for the team overall. So he's been there before. He's won a Super Bowl before, and you know, he's arguably one of the better receivers of the past decade. So adding him to the fold, I think, can do nothing but help New England's situation heading into this season.
Before we get to the pro football games, we'll have college football. That'll be on the menu next week. Sunday, the AP Top 25 was released. Ohio State, TCU, Alabama, Baylor, Michigan State in the top five. I noticed Nebraska wasn't in it, but they are bubbling under the top 25 there. What's your take on the AP? Did they do a pretty good job?
Yeah, you know, I think they always do a pretty solid job with what they have at their disposal. And obviously, you know, fans in Lincoln aren't going to love hearing that. This is the first time since 08 that, you know, Nebraska hasn't been in the top 25. But, you know, they are kind of in the group that's receiving votes. So I guess there's a silver lining there. I think that a lot of people really doubled down on their stock in Tennessee. And for me, I don't think them, you know, blasting away in their bowl game was enough of a convincing move for me to assume that they would be in the top 25. And obviously the AP has them 25th, you know, heavily below Missouri, who's 24th in points. But, you know, I think that a bowl victory goes a long way. But, you know, when you consider how much turnover that team has had, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I'm just not so sure that they should be, you know, immediately in the top 25. But, you know, that remains to be seen. And like you said, the season will be underway next week, and I'm looking forward to it.
A little bit on baseball, too. Well, we have three just sizzling hot teams. The Cardinals not as hot as the two teams chasing them, but in the National League Central, the Cubs 72-51. They're 21 games over 500, yet 6.5 games out of first in third place. They would be leading every other division except the American League Central. But the good news for Cubs fans, they're 6.5 in front of the Giants for that second wild card spot. And based on what I'm seeing, I don't see any collapse in sight. It looks like the Cubs might, at the very least, be a wild card team.
No, I think you're totally right. The NL Central is probably the most absurd division I can remember in any sport. Certainly over the last half decade, you know, three teams potentially, you know, getting into the postseason is just incredible. And like you said, it seems like every time, you know, Chicago goes on a run, you know, Pittsburgh or St. Louis will counter with wins, and they kind of all seem to be on similar wavelengths in terms of, you know, success in the field. If one team loses, it seems like the other two lose. And if one team wins, it seems like the other two win. But yeah, I mean, the Chicago faithful has, you know, every reason to get excited. You know, this would be their first postseason in a couple of years, and you know, I know those fans want it as much as anyone else. So it'd be great to see three teams represented from the NL Central, and it'd certainly be a shocking turn of events when we consider how, you know, teams normally qualify for the for the postseason.
In the American League, Toronto made a bunch of moves, big moves, before the trade deadline, and they're paying off. They're now tied with the Yankees, took over first place briefly. The Yankees have caught them. They're right now in a dead heat. And also in the last week, Texas now on a pace to be a wild card team with either the Yankees or the Blue Jays. So a lot of those moves that those teams made really paid off, Josh.
Yeah, you know, but like I said, you know, pitching kind of wins championships, and Toronto certainly, you know, I know they made the move to get Price. Outside of that, you know, their rotation is pretty lackluster. It'd be shocking to see them make a deep postseason run, but with, you know, how much power they have in their lineup at seemingly every single spot, you know, it really is a fun team to watch right now. So, you know, we'll see if they can keep up, you know, their offensive pace. And obviously the Yankees are, you know, dying at the thought of, you know, maybe potentially missing out on the playoffs again. So I'm sure the Yankees will, you know, kick it into overdrive, and hopefully they can get, you know, CeCe Sabathia back and their rotation healthy again. But, you know, it's an exciting time for baseball. Obviously Texas, you know, hasn't really been on the scene for a while, but, you know, all it takes is making a run at the appropriate time, and now certainly seems to be that moment.
Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you one NBA question. I read the ESPN article on worst NBA newcomers for the coming season. They listed in this order: Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson, Wesley Matthews, Deron Williams, and Roy Hibbert. Is there anyone you believe does not belong on that list?
Yeah, you know, I did write an article about Roy Hibbert potentially not helping the Lakers as much as people, you know, hope he will, but you know, the Lakers were just so abysmal on the defensive end last season. And, you know, that's really the one thing that, you know, Hibbert can bring to the table. You know, he can lock down the paint area. You know, Sloan Analytics Conference ran a paper called the Hibbert Effect, just based off of his ability to deter, you know, LeBron James at the rim. And I know that was 2 years ago, and obviously a lot has changed since then. But, you know, Roy Hibbert's still one of, you know, the premier big men, you know, defenders in the NBA. And so I feel like he can bring something to them that they don't, you know, already have. Jordan Hill was, you know, a problem at the center position last season, particularly on the defensive end. So I would just assume that he could bring something to the table that maybe the other four guys, you know, aren't going to be able to, or aren't going to immediately be able to help the team with next season.
Josh, I appreciate it as usual. We'll chat with you next Tuesday and put some college football on the front burner. That'll be good to do.
Sounds great.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun. We'll look back on week one of high school football, look ahead to this week, talk some Murray State football. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Neil Bradley Show at 1340WNBS.com.